This is Kim.
This is Cal.
And you're listening to Shiny Things. Welcome, faithful listeners. And if you're new to Shiny Things, welcome to you too. So it's been a really busy few weeks, and I actually did get a chance to go through some of the requests that were left for us at our email account, and that's shinythingspodcast@gmail.com. Many people requested the same show idea, so I figured I'd take a look into that, and that's on the disappearance of 5-year-old Summer Wells. And after I did research, I knew I had to have an episode on this little girl. So there's not a lot of information revealed since the start of this investigation, but that's because it's an open investigation and therefore not all of the information pertaining to the case has been released to the public, because they're trying to basically keep it under wraps for now so they don't tarnish the case in the investigation. It's one of those cases that was heavily followed in the media, but since has dwindled as the days gone by, and seems everyone has their own theory on what happened. But with that said, I want to mention that I'm going to be as impartial as I can and share with you the information that's available to the public and let you form your own opinion. Also, before I begin, I wanted to mention that there are several inconsistencies with the story I'm about to share, but the main goal here is to bring awareness to the disappearance of this little girl. And also, please remember, anyone that speaks on any of the audio clips that I do provide during the podcast is innocent until proven otherwise. So without further ado, this is a story of missing Summer Moon Utah Wells. Summer was born to Candace Bly and Don Wells on February 4th, 2016 in Hawkins County, Tennessee. And just like any other little girl, she loved to dance and watch cartoons. She loved the movie Frozen and would often pretend she was Elsa, as I'm sure most little girls do, and some adults. Wink, wink. Summer was the youngest with 3 older brothers and was also quite a tomboy.
She'd give them a run for their money every day. She'd give them a run for their money. And there was times, you know, we'd be, you know, that our boys like, don't do this and don't do that. And next thing you know, a stick would come up and just whop them, you know, and be like, Summer, don't do that.
Summer was the boss of the family.
She's typical girl.
They get out of line, she'd put them in line.
She'd do her best.
She'd love to play in the mud and the water and swing on her swing and enjoy dirt.
When I run the lawnmower around, she would run behind me. When the boys run their bikes around, she, as fast as that little bike could go, she would be behind them running and keeping up with them, no problem.
At one point, her head was shaved. Now, there seems to be some inconsistencies as to why, because in one interview, Candace said Summer wanted her head shaved so she'd be like her brother, since they all had their head shaved. But then in another interview, Don said her hair was getting out of control. I guess basically it was getting very knotty and hard to manage, and that she even tried to shave it herself, so they decided to shave it and let it grow back, and went on to say that Candace shaved her head so she wouldn't feel so bad. I'm not sure it makes any difference one way or the other, but I thought it was kind of odd. Candace and Don and their 4 children, they lived on 11 acres of heavily wooded land located on Ben Hill Road in Beach Creek, Tennessee, along with Candace's mom, who lived in a trailer about 25 to 30 feet away from their home. Now, Mom and Grandma share the same name, so I'm going to refer to Candace's mother, that's Summer's grandmother, by her nickname Candy, so we can avoid any mix-ups. They also had between 8 and 13 dogs on the property at any given time. On June 15th, 2021, Don, that's Summer's dad, got up to go to work, just like he always did, and he left the house between 7 and 8. He couldn't remember the exact time, but he drove approximately 45 minutes to an hour to get to his work site in Jonesboro. Candace woke around the same time that Don left for work because she had to take her mom to an 8 a.m. doctor's appointment in Kingsport. Now, seeing that the drive to Kingsport was about 40 minutes, and since they both mentioned at one point that they weren't good with times, I'm guessing Don left the house closer to 7 a.m., maybe a little bit earlier. The next part of the story now, that's where it gets a little bit confusing because Candace and Hunter's description of the events that took place on that day aren't entirely the same. And while I realize I haven't told you who Hunter is yet, I will explain him in a little bit. So according to Candace, she dropped Candy off at her doctor's appointment and she and Summer waited in the car for her until she was going to get out. But she actually got a call from this 15-year-old family friend who is, you guessed it, Hunter. His mom, Allison, and Candace had been friends, but apparently they had some sort of falling out and were no longer friends, but the Wells family still stayed in contact with Hunter. So, like I said, Candace got a call from Hunter asking what they were doing, and when Candace told him they were in Kingsport waiting for Candy to finish up at her doctor's appointment, Hunter suggested that they come over and hang out at his house until Candy was done. So they did, and not soon after, Candy called to be picked up, and Hunter went along for the ride. So after Candy was picked up, they went through the Walgreens drive-thru to get a prescription filled for Candy. And while they were in line at the drive-thru, Don called. And apparently that's very normal for him to call and just, you know, check in on the day and see how everything was going. So they finally get up to the window and they're told by the clerk that it was going to take at least 30 minutes to fill the script. So Candy decided to take everyone to Warriors Path State Park so Summer could go swimming. On the way to the park, they made two stops, according to Candace. The first was at a discount smoke shop where Candace said she purchased 3 cans of Twisted Tea. And for those of you that don't know what Twisted Tea is, it's basically a boozy iced tea. The second stop was to another smoke shop or dispensary called Hippie House, where Candace bought Skittle-flavored vape pens. When they reached the park, Summer made a beeline to the water, and from what Candace said, Hunter walked into the woods, and she's not really sure why. When he returned, they sat and watched Summer play in the water, and eventually he joined her. And I'm not sure how long they stayed at the park, but at some point, they piled back into the car and made their way to Walgreens to pick up the prescription, and then made a stop at the local Sonic for slushies, then stopped off at a grocery store, picked up some milk and a few other items that took no longer than 10 minutes. They then dropped Hunter off at the house, and lastly, they headed home. Now, I'm not sure at this point where Candy was. I don't know if she was sitting on the beach with them or she had stayed in the car, but I don't remember Candace mentioning where Candy was. According to Hunter, the day's events were similar to Candace's, but there were some differences, such as he said it was Candace who texted him that morning and said Candy had a doctor's appointment and said he called her back and invited them to hang out at his house until the appointment was over. And Candace didn't mention anything about texting him first, but she could have just forgot that part. I'm not sure if any of this makes a difference, but I thought I'd add it just for a timeline. So when Candace and Summer got to Hunter's, he said Candace told him the boys went to work with Don, and that's why they weren't with them. Candace said that the boys stayed home alone, but I couldn't find any information that would verify it one way or the other. Anyway, Hunter said he remembers Candace saying she wanted to take Summer fishing, and he asked if he could go too, but before they could go fishing, Candy called and said that she was ready to be picked up. So they got in the car and went to pick Candy up and then headed to the pharmacy. Now remember, Candace, in her version, Don called her when they were in line in the drive-thru at the pharmacy just to check in with them. Now Hunter said Don called too, but he said Candace told him he was talking about a strange man that was on their property for over a week. According to Candace and Don, there was no mention of a strange man on the property. They didn't know what he was talking about. Hunter went on to say that after Don called, the pharmacist or the clerk told them that it would take at least 30 minutes to fill the script. So Candace switched gears and decided to take Summer swimming instead of fishing because it was so hot out. Hunter said they made just one stop to a discount tobacco store before the park, and Candace bought cigarettes for Candy and Skittle-flavored vapes and a couple of Twisted Teas. Hunter said they went to Hippie House after swimming. When they got to the park, Hunter said Summer went in the water while he and Candace sat on the water edge watching her, and they were smoking vape pens and drinking Twisted Teas. And yes, he's 15 years old, but he said Candace gave it to him, which Candace vehemently denies. Hunter said that during the time, he noticed Summer under the water for what he thought to be 10 to 15 seconds. But even though he thought she was okay, he thought he better check anyway, just to make sure. So he decided to go in the water and said she appeared to be fine. Now, from what Candace said, nothing even close to Hunter's description happened. After that, they headed back to the car where Candy had stayed the whole time and put minutes on her phone. And this is according to Hunter. Now, he said the next stop was to Hippie House. Now, remember, Candace said they went to Hippie House before the park. Now, since the shop sold Delta 8 and Delta 10 and THC, the things along that line, Hunter and Summer weren't allowed to go in the shop, so they stayed in the car and watched TikTok videos. After Hippie House, they went to Walgreens and picked up Candy's prescription and went to Sonic, just like Candace had said, and got their slushies and made a stop to the grocery store before dropping Hunter back home. Hunter said he and Summer stayed in the car watching TikTok videos for about an hour, which is a huge difference from what Candace said, and she said 10 minutes at the most. And I get that everyone's perception of time can be a little different. And I don't know about you, but that seems like a huge difference, but I digress. So when they got back to the car, Hunter said he helped them put the groceries in the car, and then Candace dropped him back home. Now I'll circle back to Candace's recollection of the day. And I know this is confusing because I'm a little bit confused myself, but bear with me. So when they got home, the boys came out to help bring the bags of groceries in the house, which makes me wonder why, because if Candace was only in the store for 5 to 10 minutes and only bought a few things, why would they need to help her? But anyway, The rest of the day, she said, was basically the same as any other day. TV, laundry, that kind of stuff. Until Candace and Summer went to Candy's house for about 30 to 40 minutes to help her repot some flowers. So when they finished, Candace said Summer asked to go home. So she walked her to the front door and told the boys to keep an eye on her until she got back, because she had to go back to Candy's and help her with a knee brace, which, according to Candace, only took about 2 minutes. So when Candace returned home minutes later, the boys were watching TV, and they told her that Summer went downstairs to play in the playroom. And FYI, Summer and her parents' bedrooms were also downstairs. And I'll give you a layout of the house in a little bit. So allegedly, Candace hollered downstairs to Summer several times, but she didn't answer. So Candace went downstairs, and there was no Summer. So she started to panic, and her first thought was to call Don. And he actually told her to hang up and call 911. Apparently, they both ended up calling 911. Anyway, Candace said she ran to her mother's house to use her phone to call 911, and said the reason she did that was because that was the only cell phone that would, and I quote, get out there. I'm not really sure what that means, since she called Don on her phone, so she obviously had cell service. But anyway, she called the police, but couldn't wait for them to come because she was so nervous and upset. She said she jumped in her mom's truck and went everywhere she could think of, but didn't see any cars or any people around. Nothing out of the ordinary. Now remember, this is a very rural area, very desolate, not a lot of people around. Candace said she was flipping out at this point in time, which obviously any parent would be. The official missing persons report was made to Hawkins County Police Department around 6:30 p.m. on June 15, 2021.
You can interrupt 110, 110 Benfield Road off of Beach Creek. Should be the first residence on your right. Reference to a missing 4-year-old. The parents have called in and advised that the mother had went for a walk, came home, now they can't find her. They've been yelling for her. She's been gone for about 10 minutes now.
So to recap, the dispatcher said Summer went missing while Candace was on a walk. My question is, whose call is the audio I just played connected to? If it's Don's call, it's possible that when Candace called him, he misunderstood some of what she said leading up to the disappearance. And in that case, he very well could have, you know, misunderstood what she said or made an error while he was speaking to the 911 dispatch office. But if the call was related to Candace's, maybe the dispatcher misunderstood what Candace said, or is it possible Candace wasn't being completely truthful about where she was? So Candace said she didn't wait for the police to arrive and said she started searching right away and sent her boys down to the creek with walkie-talkies and a buck knife while she spoke to neighbors and asked them to start looking for Summer too. Allegedly, Don arrived home before law enforcement got to the house and saw neighbors searching in the woods. Now, I'm having a really hard time wrapping my brain around the fact that Don was able to get from his work site that was at the very least 45 minutes from his home before any police officers, unless the police took their sweet time to respond to a missing child report. But in my opinion, that's highly unlikely. And this being an ongoing investigation, a lot of critical information hasn't been released to the public. So at this point, We just will have to go on what we know, which is basically half of what the law knows. Now, as far as the layout of the Wells home, when you walk through the front door, there's a room that looks like a storage room, lots of random items. From there, you go to your right and you walk into a kitchen, but it's almost like a great room because it's a kitchen and it also has their TV in it. It's basically the room that they spend most of their time hanging out in. And then the boys' bedroom is off of the kitchen. So the stairs to the basement area where Candace and her husband Don and Summer's bedrooms are, along with their playroom, is downstairs in the basement. Now, the stairs going down there are under what looks like a table or a butcher block, if you will, but it's actually a crawl space underneath the stairs that are so narrow that you need to go down them backwards. So once you're downstairs, there's three windows that are covered with some sort of reflective material. And then there's a door going outside to their backyard and it faces the woods. This is where this room that I'm explaining is actually where the parents sleep. Now, the house is built on an incline, meaning the front of the house that faces Candy's trailer sits less than 50 feet away and is level with the driveway. The basement door to the back of the house faces the woods and isn't visible from Candy's trailer. So if someone took Summer, they'd need to enter and exit through the basement, and neither parents can remember if they lock the door. There wasn't any forced entry, but Candace is adamant that Summer would never leave the house alone, let alone go into the woods by herself, which is understandable. She's little. So let me mention that the conditions in which they lived weren't ideal to most people's standards, but they made do with what they had. And remember, this is not a wealthy area, so by comparison, they lived very well. Also, I want you to remember is that they had between 8 and 13 dogs at this time. Now, I don't know about you, but I find it hard to believe that none of these dogs barked. The subject was posed to Candace, who said that the dogs just weren't barkers, and that someone could have easily come up through the woods without making a sound to alert the dogs. They could have entered the basement through that back door of the house, taken Summer, and left. Honestly, I find that hard to believe that since I have two dogs that bark over every little noise, that not one dog would have heard somebody go in that back door or saw them without them barking. So the first day Summer was reported missing, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation was contacted and search was organized, and it included rescue squad personnel, police, volunteer firefighters. Cadaver dogs were also brought in hopes that they could pick up her scent. Now, remember, I mentioned how heavily wooded this property was. It also has lots of creeks and is extremely hilly, making it that much more difficult to search. They had aerial searches that went on into the night, and at 12:06 a.m. on June 16th, an endangered child alert was issued. 11 hours later, an Amber Alert was issued. 5-year-old Summer has been described as having blonde hair, blue eyes, was 3 feet tall, and weighed approximately 40 pounds. She was last seen wearing a pink top, gray sweatpants, and was most likely barefoot. A press conference was held notifying the public of Summer's disappearance and were asked to report anything they may have seen the day of or the day prior to Summer's disappearance that seemed out of the ordinary. The day Summer was reported missing, Candace was taken to the police station to take a polygraph test, but she wasn't able to complete it because her emotions were all over the place and she was hysterically crying and she couldn't stop, which I understand. 5 days later, though, she took it again with Don and Candy and all three of them passed. But keep in mind, polygraphs, that although they're useful tools, they're not always accurate. And they're not always admissible in court. I'm not saying that they're lying. I'm just saying that they're not always accurate. So, a few weeks after the initial search, Candace came forward and said that she was unhappy with the way the search was going. In particular, she was upset with the handling of the cadaver dogs. She said that she wasn't notified that the cadaver dogs were coming, and because of that, she wasn't able to get all of her dogs in before they came. Candace believes that the cadaver dogs could have been distracted by her dogs, which wasn't true because they picked up Summer's scent and tracked it down the path that's close to the back door of the basement. And it goes right down a ravine to the main road. But when they reached the road, her scent was lost. Now, and I also, now sidebar, I saw an interview with Don, and he said he didn't even know about that path, which is kind of hard for me to believe because he lived there. But anyway, police said there's no real evidence of an abduction, which I don't understand because the cadaver dogs followed Summer Scent down that path to the main road and then lost it. So she didn't just disappear into thin air. They've also stated that the family has been very cooperative, but they've also said that nobody is being ruled out as a suspect. And while most of the neighbors have been nothing but friendly and cooperative, there's also been some that are unwilling to help and allegedly refuse to let police search their property, unless there was or is a reason to. I think I could speak for most people when I say when there's a missing child, you do whatever you have to do to help. You shouldn't have to feel like you're obligated by the law. You should just do it because you're a human being and you care about other people. One neighbor actually came forward and said that not long after she learned of Summer, her disappearance, she and her kids had heard some kind of very creepy scream, like it was very animalistic. But she says it wasn't from an animal and remembers hearing a door slam and said it seemed kind of suspicious, but she dismissed it. So anyway, it was unfounded. The neighbor was actually interviewed several times by the authorities, and they came to the conclusion that her claims have nothing to do with the case. Candace has continued to be vocal, saying she doesn't think the police are doing enough to find Summer and believes it's because she's poor, which, remember, in the past, I mentioned that they live in a more of a low-income area. But I'm sure that someone's income has nothing to do with finding a lost child. So, to circle back again to Hunter for a moment, he said that he and his girlfriend went back to the same park that day, and Candace called him to tell him that Summer was missing. He also said that she called again the following day, which was Wednesday, from the police station. And I'm not sure what they spoke about, but I'm assuming it was about Summer. The following day, 2 days later, Thursday, Hunter said Candace came to his house and was telling him about what transpired at the police station. And he also said that she asked him not to tell anyone that she had given him the twisted tea at the park. Now remember, when I mentioned Hunter said Candace and he sat and watched Summer and drank Twisted Teas, Candace had denied that she had given him any. So in that same visit, Hunter said he snuck into Candace's car to see if there was anything quote-unquote suspicious. Authorities advise Hunter to have no further contact with the Wells family after speaking to him until they could investigate the matter further, and I'm not sure if they lifted that advisement as of yet, but 6 weeks after Summer disappeared, her brothers were removed from the home by CPS, and I couldn't find out for sure why, but they are minors, plus caseworkers involved may have been under a gag order, which basically means zip your lips. Don said they were removed because of the strain Summer's disappearance was having on him and his marriage, and went on to say that he was drinking excessively and doing what he referred to as quote-unquote other stuff. He went on to say people were insinuating they were involved with Summer's disappearance, and went on to say that from the beginning he had been questioning their safety due to all the media coverage and speculation, so he was relieved when the boys were removed from the home. The area was searched more than once right after Summer was reported missing. Land, air, water. It was also researched in November when the foliage changed. They went through hundreds of tips. They searched the Wells home more than once. They searched their vehicles, their outbuildings, items on the property. Nothing was found. They even had canine units trained in specific search methods brought in to search the property. Nothing. They had search warrants and subpoenas issued, allowing authorities to search through the family's cell phones, computers, social media accounts for digital evidence. Nothing was found. Neighbors and any known sex offenders in the area were also interviewed. Not one piece of evidence was found that led to Summer's whereabouts. Or let me rephrase that. If there were any pieces of evidence found, that were deemed credible in this case, it wasn't released to the public because, like I said before, it's an ongoing case. Candace and Don believe their daughter was abducted. They think someone took her from the basement, brought her down the ravine where a car was parked, put her in the car, and left. At this point in time, there's no evidence of abduction or foul play. It could be as simple as the fact that Summer may have wandered off and got lost, but nothing's being ruled out at this point in time. There was an individual that reported seeing a 1998 to 2000 maroon or red Toyota Tacoma with a ladder rack and white buckets in the truck bed parked in the area of Ben Hill Road late afternoon, early evening, but they weren't sure if it was Monday the 14th or Tuesday the 15th. But again, nothing came of it, and nothing came from the hundreds of reports of other vehicles matching that description. And there's also a theory floating around amongst all the other theories that there's possible involvement of what they call in the South the cornbread mafia. But Don said he had never heard of the group before and said that he and Candace would never be involved with people like that and would never allow their children near types of crime like that. At this point, everybody involved in the case is being considered potential persons of interest. And the Wells family has definitely been of interest to the public since most of the comments online, or at least the ones I've seen, allude to the family having some kind of involvement in Summer's disappearance. And once again, this is just theories floating around. I'm not saying that they're guilty of anything. I'm just giving you information so you can make up your own mind. So about 5 months after Summer disappeared, Candace and Don were on the Dr. Phil show discussing Summer's disappearance with two body language experts who broached the subject of that cornbread mafia theory. And Candace became visibly upset and stormed off the set and went on to say she felt like they were interrogating her. Candace spoke out another time and explained why she was so emotional. And she said it was because just prior to that interview, there was a potential lead, which didn't pan out. But anyway, she was extremely stressed out during the interview and basically couldn't take it anymore. The body language expert said Candace exhibited some questionable behavior and body language during the interview. Before she even left the interview, they said that she made herself unavailable. They went on to say that Don appeared to be paying attention while Candace was not. She was basically fidgeting around, and they pointed out how Candace's chin went down when they asked questions that made her feel like she was being threatened. I'm surmising, it's some sort of psychological mechanism that protects the neck. Like when you feel like you're getting attacked, you're going to protect yourself. It's like it's an instinctual thing. Remember, innocent until proven guilty. No one knows for sure where Summer is except for the person or persons responsible. And nobody even knows if there is a responsible person. It could have just been that Summer wandered off and no one's found her. Sometimes the guiltiest person is actually the innocent person. And before I let you go, I know I've given you a ton of information to think about, but there's so much more. This is just like the tip of the iceberg. There's so many other theories on this. So many more people are Monday morning quarterbacking this. And no one knows, like I said, nobody knows for sure what's going on. I mean, there was even speculation that it could possibly have happened in the care of her brothers, and maybe the parents are trying to cover up for them so they aren't hurt. Nobody knows for sure. But with all that said, the one thing that we need to concentrate on is trying to find this little girl and, you know, resolve this missing case. And I'm going to add one more thing before I go for you to think about, because I'm not quite done yet. So Candace's sister, Rosemarie Bly, also went missing under similar circumstances back in 2009. Short synopsis, she left her home in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin around 7:30 at night. She was going to meet her cousin at a bar about 5 miles from her home, and she told her husband that she'd be home by midnight, but according to the reports, she never made it home and she never even made it to the bar. But her white Pontiac Grand Am was found undamaged and had no evidence of foul play, and the key was not in the ignition or anywhere in the car. It was found 5 days later in Grantsburg, Wisconsin, which is about 30 miles from her residence, in a parking lot near a post office that's normally used by truck drivers to park their tractor trailers. And so apparently Rosemarie and her husband had a troubled relationship. And prior to her disappearance, police were called to the residence for a domestic dispute. Her husband accused her of slapping him, and she accused him of putting her in a headlock and banging her head on the ground. And in June 2009, Christopher, that's her husband, filed for a divorce, but withdrew the filing after he and Rosemarie reconciled. So after her disappearance, which was 2009 of August, 2 months later, Christopher took a polygraph test and passed and isn't considered a suspect. But shortly after her disappearance, he filed for a divorce and custody of their children. And that was granted in 2010. So her mother speculated that she became disoriented and wandered away from her vehicle due to an injury she had sustained a week before when she fell off a horse. She went on to say that she had had headaches after the fall, and her mom told her that she needed to go to the doctor, but there really wasn't any evidence that she had done so or anything that would support that theory. So Rosemarie is still not found, and the case remains unsolved, but I kind of thought it was odd when they said that the husband filed for a divorce and custody of the children right after she disappeared because he didn't want her to come back and take them away. So I'm wondering if she just took off with someone, or, you know, maybe they had a troubled marriage and maybe that's what he thought happened. But Rosemarie was 21 when she disappeared. Her current age is 34. She is between 5 foot tall and 5 foot two, weighing between 105 and 110 pounds. Her birth date is September 16th, 1987. She had a chin length bob haircut, brown hair, but she often changed it, blonde sometimes, red sometimes. She had brown eyes, piercings in her ears and her navel. And she had a tattoo of two cherries on the inside right ankle. And the last clothes she was seen in was a white tank top, blue jeans, and flip-flops. If you have any information regarding Rosemarie, please contact the Sheriff's Department at 715-485-8362. Find us at patreon.com/shinythingspodcast. Follow us on Instagram at shinythingspodcast. Find us on our Facebook group page called Shiny Things Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at shinythingspod1. You can email us at shinythingspodcast@gmail.com. Don't be shy. Use any of our social media to send us show ideas, some love, or share additional details we may have missed. Remember to like us and give us 5 stars on your favorite podcasting platform. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This show is a part of the Quite the Thing Media Podcast Network.